You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Tuesday, it's the 5 o'clock shadow doubleheader dream team edition with Nick Kunzer from Sandlin Private Wealth and also the ubiquitous David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. Nick, the market was down and looked a little bit edgy this morning, but of course, because of the CPI number, which I think is coming out tomorrow, markets have just said, let's just sit on the sidelines for now because this is a big number. Is that the right call from me?
There definitely seems to be a little bit of a holding pattern, no doubt about it, as well as the CPI number. Don't forget, we have the US earnings season kicking off on Wednesday and Thursday, so that's tomorrow as well, with the big banks, which is a very good barometer to the economy. So not only waiting for inflation prints, if you want to get an idea of what the biggest economy in the world is doing, I think the banks are going to give a quite a good indication of what's going on. So that's this week as well. And then also, offshore, I saw the volumes of thin offshore and local too. I mean, it's just, I mean, tell you what they are. I mean, yesterday was 11 billion. Today's 15.3. So very, very thin volumes. And I think you're right, Lindsay, a little bit of a holding pattern this week before those earnings season starts. And then also, we tend to forget sitting in South Africa in the cold weather, but it is the middle of a European Northern Hemisphere summer. And typically, it's fairly quiet time. So I think a whole contribution of a lot is a bit of an uneventful marketplace.
What about inflation, David? You're more of a student of real life than myself and Nick. Well, actually, Nick, because he's a numbers man. I would have a look at that inflation number tomorrow. What do you say to yourself? Do you say that the oil price is now in single figures, figures, it's below $100 a barrel. It's fallen, and at its peak, lest we forget, it was $139 a barrel, but has been averaging sort of 110 to 120 for quite a while. Do you think that the inflation number tomorrow from the United States of America will surprise to the downside?
No. Well, they already priced it in. I mean, they know you can more or less forecast it with accuracy. So I don't think the headline number will be lower than what they're forecasting, 8.8. So they'll throw a tantrum and everybody, it'll be headlines and that. But I think what you're alluding to is I think very relevant, that you're getting an oil price now that is hovering around 100. And if anything, it looks more like going to 90 or something at this stage than it is to 120, 125 again. It looks lower. The copper prices come off. Wheat prices have come off. So all of these are coming down. Now, these are traders' positions that are being unfolded or undone, or alternatively, people are going the other way. So for me, it's a very good indication of what people are thinking about future prices, the commodity complex. So down the line, of course, we're going to get easing inflation. The big question is on wages. But even if you looked on Friday, Lindsay, you know, there was no suggestion of a increase in wage levels, you know, to a point of making the market worry. So there's still a few months to go through. You know, we're not going to resolve this tomorrow. It's still going to be a couple of months, and we're just going to churn some sets.
Do you want to
commit yourself?
No. Here we go.
I was going to just add exactly what David's saying. I mean, this is a lot of this is speculative. I mean, this is you're asking for David to look at the actual more of the numbers and the facts, but a lot of this is speculative. I mean, bearish bets on copper open interest, that was the highest since 2015. That was out last week. The trader commitments report, I always keep an eye on. You know, the soft agricultural futures contracts, there was something like 150,000 contracts that liquidated to the end of June. That's the highest on record. So, you know, a lot of these commodities that have been blamed for the inflation sitting where it's sitting have absolutely been hammered. I mean, copper's down 35% since March. Dr. Copper, you've spoken about oil, $25 from its high, or higher if you look at what the intraday print was when Russia invaded Ukraine, and then all the other raw materials, you know, also coming off quite a bit from its highs. Timber. I mean, timber is much lower than it was before Russia invaded Ukraine. There's a whole lot of facts and figures here where I think you'll we'll see the market is a bit of a dichotomy at the moment between what these commodity prices are sitting and what they've been blamed for and where they actually are. So I think we're probably nearing a bit of a peak inflation number, quite honestly.
I think so
and
too.
And now, of course, everyone's looking a little bit further on. It's like, okay, so if oil is telling us it's what it's doing and copper's telling us this, well, then maybe inflation is not a concern. Maybe it's that dreaded recession, but I don't know. After that unemployment print on Friday, I think you're a little bit cooked if you think the U.S. is in recession.
No recession, absolutely no recession, although there may be two or three different United States of America.
Definitely a slowdown.
There's a growth U.S. and there's an employment U.S., and I don't understand. I think it's because I'm not going to talk out of turn here. But anyway, Nick, you talked about the commitments of traders report, and I need to, because some people email me and say I didn't understand what Nick said or David said.
Yeah.
So the commitments of traders report is from the CFTC, and that's the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. And it used to come out every single Friday, and clever people used to look at it. I thought it was a 2-week thing now. Or
it's a week late.
There we go. It used to be absolutely live. And what it tells you is where people are positioning themselves. So if you see that the preponderance of copper futures short positions is, 63.2% or something, you say, wait a second, something's got to happen.
60,000 tons at the last count.
Exactly. So something's got to happen quite soon. So don't go short of copper, get long of copper. And eventually the CFTC said, no, this is too much. And they received complaints from the really big trading houses and said, you can't keep on putting this stuff out because people know what our position is. And that's my understanding of it, Nick. But it's a useful indicator, isn't it?
It is a useful indicator. And it goes one step further, Lindsay, is it breaks it down into what they call speculative positions and retail positions to producers. So it breaks it down into three different levels.
Yeah.
So if you are a copper producer, and you are hedging, you basically report your hedging positions. To make things a little bit more fairer, they have put a weekly delay on it. So you'll be able to know if Anglo-American or Glencore have hedged a big copper position. You'll see it on the hedging side, on the producing side. And then they'll post big hedge funds will have to post their speculative positions as well. So it gives quite a good indication. So for me, it is a bit of a lagging indicator. It's a bit of a week behind. But it certainly does, I think, give a snapshot on what the speculators are thinking. So when I see copper is fallen 32% since March, and then I see that the bearish bets on copper last Sunday were basically the hedge funds were net short 60,000 lots, which is about half, it's about 1.5, 1.6 million tons of this red metal. Mm-hmm. And bearing in mind that was 4,000 lots a month ago, it's now 60,000 lots.
Don't be short,
Nick, do you disclose a short position? Because, a trade is a trade. Someone's buying that. Mm. So how do you know?
No, the exchange is posted. The exchange is posted.
So the
exchanges will post that.
Yeah.
This is someone entering a short position. They're not closing off a long. It's entering a short. Mm. And then they work out the net as well, David. So you'll see that there's 60,000 longs and 50,000 shorts. Okay. So it's a net short of 10.
Okay. They have to disclose where they sit.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm with you. So when you're an exchange and you open up account, you're opening it as David Shapiro, the speculator, or David Shapiro, the producer.
Okay.
So they know what your business is. And as I said, it is a bit of a week behind, but it does give an indication. Yeah. I think it's fairly. It just gives you a sort of litmus test of where we are. But needless to say, my sort of observation of this big sell-off which we've had in the commodity basket, and I'm talking about softs and PGMs and all the rest of it. Is I think a lot of it is speculation. You can't tell me that the demand for copper is the lowest it's been in years.
Yeah.
It's not. We know for a fact there's a shortage of the London Metal Exchange warehouses. But
Nick, sorry, David, before you come in.
The fact that they're taking. Okay, go.
No, I'm just going to tell you, and then you carry on while it's still in my mind. Nick, David and I have speculated upon this in the last few weeks. And my personal opinion is that during COVID and other events, people just said to themselves, okay, I've got to load up now. The supply chain problems, let me just load up with copper or nickel or iron ore or something. Mm. Let's get loaded up, replenish my stocks. And now they're finding, you know, the demand is maybe less than they thought because the world's economy is slowing down. And that is why prices are coming down, because there's no demand. The demand was done on the big upside. Nick, any validity?
I'd agree with it. And I'd hesitate to say that something like a copper future or what we're seeing in oil, it's very difficult to manipulate something like the size of the oil market in the world. Just the WTI contract is bigger than anyone. You know, no one can really, there's no manipulation of that price. So when you, I do think when you see oil doing what it's doing, number one, and it's about 20% of that CRB index, Lindsay, you follow that very closely.
I do.
And then copper is also part of that basket. The two standouts for me that are showing what the world economy is doing are selling up quite a bit. So, and then don't forget as well, I mean, all three of us know that markets are you know, forward-looking in their discounting mechanisms. So they're discounting what they think is going to happen in the future. So the market is currently pricing in probably a slowdown, certainly in the next 3 to 6 months this year, which I'd agree with. The market can't keep, you know, this market is definitely slowing down and interest rates are rising. The balancing act is coming, though, what the Fed does and what everyone else does, but that's a conversation for another day.
You know, what's interesting, Lindsay, is that I'm looking at the Bloomberg Commodity Index. You know, what Nick says is right. If you look at all the charts of all the major commodities, softs as well, you know, they're all kind of looping downwards. But if you put it all together and you look at Bloomberg's Commodity Index, and I'm using that, we're back to the same levels we were pre-war. So, or, you know, the same levels before Russia invaded Ukraine or thereabouts. And I think that stock seems to have been, okay, we went long, nothing's happening, let's get rid of all of that as well. So I think there's a lot of offloading. Mm. How does this translate into inflation? I don't know. You know, I don't know, because
it's such a difficult call. Dave, there's another like we don't even have sight of half the stuff. Yeah. I mean, I read a report that that Ukraine has planted, like, now that it's planting season, it's the middle of summer over there, they've planted 80% of their crops for wheat and for sunflower oil. Now, the Ukraine supplies pretty much 40% of the world's sunflower oil. So, like, last time I checked, they were still bombing the crap out of the Ukraine. Yeah. So why would farmers plant almost 80% of the entire crop has just been planted?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's, as I said, so many moving parts, so much going on, and I'm sure we're not privy to all.
Nick, I can tell you something about it. So the market knows ahead of time, and I'm just going to put
the markets are very never ceases to amaze me.
The peak of wheat, let me just put it up here. I think it was $12.79 a bushel just after the war broke out. I'm looking at it now. It's $8.32. So $12.80 to $8.30. So someone knew. The farmer said, okay, the big farmers, the big corporate farmers said, okay, let's phone up the Chicago Board of Trade and let's hedge our future crop. And down this thing came. That's my opinion.
Well, I'm just really, really upset that they don't produce any coffee beans in the Ukraine, because coffee's gone from $100 to $200, whatever, it's one to two. It's doubled, unfortunately.
And does that translate into the coffee shop that you go to, Nick and David?
I haven't really noticed. I don't think so. It should do. It should definitely do.
Of course it should, doubled. Yeah.
The cost of that bean has doubled, yeah.
Really interesting. I don't know. Normally, you have coffee at the end of the meal. You just pay. I've never noticed how much you're actually paying.
Look, it costs 5 cents on the dollar to make a cup of coffee, so I'm not going to cry over the meal.
Yeah. David, the JSE today, not much out. I mean, the Goldfields, I think, came out with a sweetener for the shareholders regarding the Yamana deal. And I know you're not a gold person, but you might have looked at it. And if you haven't, so what? Anything else on the JSE today?
You know what? Nick mentioned the volumes, and it's quite disturbing that yesterday.
Yeah.
And just,
did you see? Was that number? I thought there was a misprint.
Nah,
it was 11
yesterday
million.
Was shocking.
And now we don't even used
to
get that over
add
Christmas.
To that is that the vast majority of the trade that we're seeing now is the buyback of Prosus and Naspers, and they just came out after close now as we got on air. They just came out with the new numbers, which is update, which is almost where it was last week, thereabouts. So they're buying a couple of billion rands worth, certainly a lot more process than Naspers, but they're there steadily every day. Mm. And they're making up anywhere from 25 to 30% of the volume that we're seeing.
Goodness me, is it high as that?
Yeah, I'll tell you now. In fact, today, if I look at the volume, yeah, and I suppose I come in at the end, I don't know. Yeah, today it's actually low. It's only 21% of the market, but on average, it's anywhere from 25 to 30%. So today we saw 3.2 billion rands worth of Naspers in process of about a 15 billion market.
Yeah. 15.3, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So every day, that's it. And there's Anglos and MTN and the normal companies there. And Anglos is 4% of the market, MTN just over 3% of the market. So
I was trying to offload
absolutely zero volume on our market.
I was trying to offload a very small position in Grindrod today. Mm-hmm. I promise you, it took me the entire day to do like a couple of hundred thousand rands.
Yeah.
The whole day. It was literally, it was so thin. It's painful. I was like, my goodness. So I don't know really. That is, it's a good point, David. I don't know where everyone is or why this volume is so thin. And I noticed offshore as well. It's the same. NYSC as well was like 20% less than normal yesterday.
Go to an airport, Nick. Go to an airport and you'll see where everyone is. They're going somewhere that they're
the
not.
Traders. They're not in front of their screens. They're boarding planes.
Everyone's gone. Let me just tell you about the repurchase program for Naspers. It says here, for the period 4th of July to the 8th, the group purchased 659,095 Naspers shares at the average price of 2648.3315 per share for a total consideration of, this is rands, 1.745.502.028. Is that a trillion rand? 104,730,238
dollars. Not a trillion. Naspers.
Naspers.
They must be doing.
This is 104,730,238 dollars. And okay, so it's a billion. 1.7 billion they've purchased.
Yeah, yeah. It's $104,000.
Yeah, well, I was never very good at maths. No. Okay. And do they? The other thing is, Nick or David, do they have to flag how much they're buying back? Because again, that's a put option.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah.
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 So how much are they buying back?
They in this particular case, they don't have to, but they just said it was open-ended. That's why the few of the commentary from the offshore houses have been like, just if you've got the shares, sit back and enjoy it, because there's no end game yet. They're just going to keep it's open-ended by a repurchase program, so it's significant.
Okay, let's have a look at some spot prices if we can, because it's been an interesting day. It was on its knees, potentially kneeling down earlier on, but it has come back, turnaround Tuesday, as they would call it. Let's have a look at where the currencies are. The rand was close to 17.20 in thin conditions earlier this morning. It's now regained 16 as its big number, because it's 16.98. What a pleasure. British pound against the rand 2019, euro rand 17.08. Euro dollar coming back from the brink. It's par 58. In other words, 1.0058. British pound against the...
It did briefly trade under for about 1 second today, like two pips. Went under.
I should have got a screenshot of that. Anyway, I'll be up at three this morning, and I'm going to get it. I promise you. British pound 118.95. The gold price is down 6 to 17.32. The platinum price is down $48 an ounce to 8.31, and the palladium price is down $115 or absolutely spanked here. 2,051 now for palladium. We were talking about 3,000, 4,000. Now it's threatening to go into the 1900s. Also, the US 10-year bond yield ahead of tomorrow's CPI number is 2.915. I'm just going to refresh my screen. Yeah, 2.915%. The South African, on the other hand, and I'll ask you both, which one would you go for? At 2.915% for a US 10-year bond yield, 10.87% for the South African 10-year bond yield. David Shapiro, which one would you go for, 10.87% or 2.915%?
I think our market's held up remarkably well, but you've got to underline the but. Nick's going to have to do the calculation because while you're holding there, if you go back, if you would have been an offshore person and would have bought, you've lost the rand. I don't know how that compensates. You know, one's got to do a little bit of homework on that one and work it out. And that's always a risk. And I think that applies to most markets. So, while you might be getting a great yield, I think your problem is that you've already lost a lot on the on the currency. Oh yes, you can hedge it, but hedging costs a price.
It really does. It wipes out your profit actually, because the cost of hedging the rand, from the people that I speak to, say that is prohibitive, if that's the word. It wipes out any profit. Nick, you on this one?
Yeah, I agree with David. And every time you do buy a sovereign bond from a country that's not denominated in dollars, the one equation is always the currency exposure, the currency risk. And when you certainly play in a space like the South African sovereign bonds, what you do purchase on the local currency, local bonds, you are going to be very careful of the currencies. And I must tell you, as much as I am an SA bull, I certainly think the positives of SA for now are probably behind us. I think there's a few tailwinds coming, a few headwinds coming.
Is it too personal for me to ask you, when you see the two mass shootings, one in Soweto and one in Pietermaritzburg, do you sometimes think, actually, yes, I'm very bullish of South Africa, I love the country, I've it's been very kind to me, I've been very kind to it. Do you ever think, actually, no, this is now the time, because there may be another insurrection coming? Please tell us, David. I mean, Nick.
Me?
Yeah, you. David. Nick.
No, you can talk to Nick. I've got my own views. I think this is
David.
My first thought is obviously, notwithstanding the tragic loss of life, the next thought is automatically we have zero policing in this country. And we've got a police minister who I will not name on air. Well, how he's still got a job is anyone's business. Well, we know why he's got a job, but that's my first thought. Was like, can we not get rid of this?
I think Nick's right. You know what? This is just mafia style crime.
Lawless.
They're doing this with the construction industry. Mm. You know, you go into a construction site, they just come and say, and they're exactly like the mafia got control of the construction industry in the US. They're doing the same kind of tactics as well.
In fact, one of my good mate school buddies, who shall remain nameless, he's got a construction business in KZN. Yeah. He said it is so bad now, they cannot even sometimes get onto the site, that the mafia have padlocked the gates onto their site and taken over. And they've had to get their own security guards coming in. It's very much a lawless industry now.
So that's how they control whatever, and they,
it's lucrative.
They demand,
it's all about the money. It's money behind it.
And this is exactly, these are taverns, and that's exactly what's happened. You go in, we want protection. We wipe you out, and no one's going to go and drink there anymore.
The logistic business in South Africa is another industry which is under attack because there's no feasible reason why you should be transporting coal on the road. There's no reason for it because it's most coal around the world and energy is transported on rails. It just makes more sense. But there's so much money involved in logistics and the paybacks that it's anywhere between the last calculations, anywhere between 5 and 7 intermediaries involved to move one truck of coal for Eskom. So you've got the guy who you broker to get you the truck, to get you the driver, to get you the coal, to get you the deal, and everyone has to take the 10, 15 cents on top. That's why you wonder why it's such a – Mr. Durator's got he's got a job and a half. There's just so much corruption and trends now. It's very, very, very sad.
Okay, Nick, I'm sorry to have blindsided you on that. Talk about you staying in the country. Nick. David, I said your name by mistake, but Nick has always been a really strong supporter of South Africa. And the question was, Nick,
too old and grumpy still.
Are you ever going to change that view? What would change your mind? Mm. But that's for another discussion.
I just think it's another step closer to 2024's change in government. So I'll take it as a positive.
Good. Nick, please give us the closing JSE indices, the value trading, and also Live Wall Street.
Mm. Well, it's kind of surprise. It was a bit of a nothing finish, really. And I guess that does sum up the day. We were literally 9 basis points lower, 63 points on the JSE All Share. Top 40 index was 7 basis points. That's 0.07%, 43 points. Just a sniff under 61,000, 60,964. Value traded a terrible 15.3. I can't believe it, but it's actually better than 11 the day before.
Wow.
But yeah, very, very. This time of year, we shouldn't be doing 15 billion. We should be doing 20s and 25s ahead of US earnings season. Mm. The biggest movers on the day, it was a mixed bag. Industrials were firmer, 1.39%. Financials firmer by 1%. I guess that's the stronger rand coming back the last few hours of the US session. Tech shares, 0.75% stronger. We spoke about the Naspers process buyback. On the downside, real estate, 0.63% lower. Utilities are weaker by 1.77%. Base materials were the biggest lagger on the day, 1.82%. So I'm looking at my screen. Northern Platinum down 5%, Anglo's down 5.95%, Impala down 4.98%, Harmony Gold, spot the theme, I could go on, but pretty much top 10 on the downside. All the shiny stuff, as Lindsay said, you dig out the ground. Across on Wall Street, we are treading water ahead of the US earnings season, which starts tomorrow, and those inflation numbers that Lindsay mentioned. At the moment, we have, get some numbers up here. Hold on a second.
What do you think? 8.8%. All right,
so where the S&P has now just gone into the green, it is just 0.008% higher, 38.58 in the front month. We have the Dow Jones Industrial, so back into value. That is a 0.3% firmer, while the NASDAQ is actually a sniff just slightly lower. So a little bit of value trade today, as I said, ahead of inflation and ahead of the US earnings season, which kicks off tomorrow.
Okay, so we've got earnings, we've got inflation, two things that will, one will drive the macroeconomy and the fiscal stance from the US government and also the monetary stance, and the other one will drive the stock market, i.e., and David, last word from you, please, on that note.
I just think the one thing that we didn't discuss is the not only the commodity prices, but if you look at U.S. bond yields as well, they're coming back. Your 10-year is now below.
Mm.
Yeah, below 10. So I don't know where this is all pointing. You're getting a lot of conflicting views on what lies ahead. People talk about recession, but no one's giving you the depth of it and how bad it's like.
Let's put it this way, David. This would be, if we have a recession, it would be the most telegraphed recession in history, because everyone is talking about it. And it's not supposed to be that way.
Why I laugh about it, it's easy to say it's a recession, but no one wants to commit the size or depth of it, and that I find a bit odd.
Mm.
I keep bemoaning what we're getting from strategists and economists and everything. You know, they're all talking like this, but no one's prepared to say how deep it is or how severe it is or whatever it is. And that makes it difficult for you or for me to position clients at all. And that's why 100%. I think we just sit out and say, listen, I don't know, it's too hard to call.
Well, just before we sign off, I had a presentation this morning from a very well-respected hedge fund in our local industry. They were really rock stars. They're excellent guys. And girls, and they said what they've had to sort of position themselves and how they had to rejig their flagship hedge fund in the last 3 months. They've never had to do that much in 20 years of running it.
Mm.
That's how busy it's been now. Just how many moving parts that have been thrown at you right now as a fund manager.
Yeah.
I can second
I understand
that.
I don't feel sorry for them, funnily enough. Not with the size of their percentage fees.
Your empathy rating must be fit.
Nick Kunzer is from Sandon Private Wealth. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.